Okay, we'll move to chapter 3. There are only three chapters in Zephaniah, so the third chapter begins, "Woe, O rebellious, defiled, oppressing city! She has listened to no voice. She has accepted no instruction." So he's not getting far, this prophet. "She has not trusted in Yahweh. She has not drawn near to her God." Now look at the list. I've given you the hint at the end. It's an interesting list because mostly, if you read the prophets, their key target is the king, because the king's the one ultimately responsible, in their view, for order and the temple and everything. But Zephaniah doesn't criticize the king. He criticizes everybody else, but not the king. And I think the answer is pretty clear. The king was Josiah, who was actually doing his darndest to get the place cleaned up. But anyhow, let's read what he says. "The officials in her midst are roaring lions. Her judges are evening wolves that leave nothing till the morning, scavenging around. The prophets are reckless, faithless." So there's prophets around, all right? But he's not giving them a good thing. "Her priests profane what is sacred and do violence to the Torah." So he's very critical of everyone around in official positions except the king. "At that time, I will change the speech of the peoples to a pure speech, that all of them may call on the name of Yahweh." So God is going to, he's doing all this. He's going to do something to purify the country. "And serve him with one accord from beyond the rivers of Ethiopia." So now you're down in Cush or somewhere. "My suppliants, my scattered ones, shall bring my cereal offerings." Kind of a hope for a universal movement towards faith. "On that day, you will not be put to shame, because all the deeds by which you have rebelled against me." They've done all this, but again, the prophet is looking at us and our misbehaviours and our whatever, but he's also looking above that to God, who remains faithful. So God will always be there, gracing us even in our rebellion and our stupidity and our sinfulness. "So on that day you won't be put to shame because of all the deeds by which you've rebelled against me. For then I will remove from your midst your proud, exultant ones," the people that raise themselves up. "You shall no longer be haughty in my holy mountain. I will leave in your midst a people humble, ani, Anawim," they're related words, so simple, ordinary, poor. "I will," and he calls it humble here, aware of their dependence on God is the key point. "I will leave in your midst a people humble and lowly. They will seek refuge in the name of Yahweh. The remnant of Israel will do no wrong," once all the punishments happened and it's been cleaned out, "the remnant will do no wrong and utter no lies, nor shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouths. Then they will pasture and lie down, and no one will make them afraid." And then comes a passage that you are probably aware of more than any other. "Sing aloud, O daughter Zion, shout, O Israel, rejoice and exult." So this is the carrot and the stick, is it? You've got the stick naked in there. Come on, he says, it's worth it. God is so beautiful. Change your lives. "Rejoice and exult with all your heart, O daughter Jerusalem. Yahweh has taken away the judgments against you. He's turned away your enemies," as though it's all happening right now. "It's all, the King of Israel, Yahweh, is in your midst. You shall fear disaster no more." See, Assyria is weakening and off the thing. It's made a space, which they didn't have before, because Egypt still hadn't got it at full strength. So you've got Egypt down there licking its wounds. You've got Assyria occupied with Babylon, as we'll learn next week. And so you've got an opportunity for Judah to flex its muscles and regain its territory. And Josiah is determined to do that. So Yahweh is in your midst, that's the God of hosts, so you will fear no disaster no more. There's a new world opening up. Zephaniah hopes. On that day it shall be said to Jerusalem, do not fear, O Zion. Do not let your hands grow weak. Yahweh your God is in your midst, a warrior who gives victory. And here's a lovely little line that's, he will rejoice over you with gladness. He will renew you in his love. He will dance over you with loud singing as on a day of festival. Extraordinary image. God's going to be so delighted with you beautiful people. God's going to be up there dancing over his people. One of the Louis Jesuit hymns, and the Father will dance, you know. You might know it. It's quite a good one anyhow. So this is God dancing with joy because his people have learnt their lesson. The proud have been taken over into exile or something, and the people that are left are repentant and so on. And he concludes, those who have suffered when I harvested you, going back to the literal meaning, asap, when I shook the branches and all the fruit fell onto the ground, when I harvested you, they were a burden upon her, Jerusalem. They were a reproach. I am dealing with all who oppress you at that time, and I will save the lame and gather the outcast. I will change their shame into praise and renown in all the earth. At that time I will bring you home, at the time when I gather you, for I will make you renowned and praised among all the peoples of the earth. When I restore your fortune before your eyes, says Yahweh. So with all that bombast and determination and anger and sadness and no one's listening much, he sees a silver lining on the cloud, and he sees, because God, not because we are we, but because God is God, there will be peace, God will be delighted in you, etc., and you've just read it. Not a lot in Zephaniah probably to draw on, but there's some value there, there's some insights into God, really, that will eventually bear fruit in Jesus.